The title of this sermon is Sowing Wildflowers and was given September 18th, 2011. My college roommate rushed into our apartment. With a spark in his eyes, he informed me that Bill McCartney was speaking at our college.
So, to understand the weight of Bill McCartney, I need to pause for a second from my story. Now, if you lived in Colorado for very much time, Bill McCartney was the head football coach for the University of Colorado Buffaloes from 1982 to 1994. Bill McCartney led them to the national championship in 1990. There were three Big Eight championships he ran from 1989 to 1991, from 1989 to 1991. And he also is the founder of Promise Keepers, an organization, a Christian organization committed to empowering men to be people of integrity, people of character. So this is Bill McCartney. This is the coach from when I grew up and watched the Colorado Buffaloes on TV. This was a big deal. So as my roommate announced this good news in our apartment, I said, "We have to go." And my roommate said, "Already taken care of." I volunteered us to stack and put up chairs for the whole event. So the month came, we couldn't wait. We unfolded all the chairs at our college and we eagerly awaited for Bill McCartney to come and to speak to us. And of course, my roommate and I sat in the very front row. And as he spoke, as any college coach, the thing you need to know about Bill McCartney is that he's a player's coach. He's the type of guy that just believes in the best of his players and goes to battle for them and sort of elicits the best out of them so that they become all that they can be. So as Bill McCartney spoke, it was passion-filled. It was exciting. It was a call to be our very best. It was a call to make a difference. And if you've ever heard him speak before, he uses football analogies constantly, and he just has this way of setting your heart ablaze. So it was a very good day. And as he ended his speech to a whole audience of applause, I noticed that he walked off of the podium, and I was like, this is my shot to shake Bill McCartney's hand, and I'm not going to miss this. So I made a beeline right to him, and I shook his hand. And as I shook his hand, he looked me in the eye and he just said, "So what are you passionate about?" And I don't really remember my exact words at this point. I remember telling him something like, "You know what? I'm just passionate about the church becoming all that it can be. I'm passionate about what it can mean in people's life." And at that moment, he turned, he looked me in the eye, and he said, "I see the fire in your eye. You've got what it takes." And he takes his hand right against my cheek and he says, "Go, make a difference." I was stunned by his words. And I wish that I could tell you now that I could came up with something really cool and clever to say, but it came out like this. Yeah. So I thought about that day and those amazing words that he just spoke into my life, that calling that he called me to. And I thought, what would I say if I actually could respond to him? And one thing I thought about is saying, "Put me in the game, coach. I'm ready to play." Because I was just inspired. "Where is my jersey, Coach McCartney?" Something like that would have been a lot cleverer than, "Yeah." But then something strange happened. A day later, you know, you start to think about that, and then these creeping doubts and all these questions, and I start to have these questions of myself, like, do I really have what it takes? Can I really make a difference in this world? Could I really follow the rabbi with my life? And maybe you can relate to me in having these high moments and then these moments of absolute doubt in who you are. And I think about those early Christians, and I think about the words that Jesus spoke to those early disciples. He said, "Come and see." In fact, 2,000 years ago on the Sea of Galilee, two disciples were taking some steps right behind the rabbi. And the rabbi turned around and said to them, "What are you seeking?" And one of the disciples was bold enough to say, "Rabbi." That means teacher. Now you have to understand, there's a difference in the ancient world, in our world, with the word rabbi. When you commit to following a rabbi, you commit with all your heart, all your mind, and your soul to follow this great teacher. You commit not just to believe in their words, but to follow the pattern of their life, to give yourself to all that the rabbi is and is headed for, to master the teachings of a rabbi. So this disciple said, "Rabbi," just a verbal way of saying, "I want to follow you." And then he said, "Where are you staying? I want to make my home with you and learn to follow you." To which Jesus responded, "Come and see." And I think it is amazing that for the last 2,000 years, in our highs and in our lows, in the ebbs and in the flows of our life, that the rabbi comes to us and says, "Come and see. Come, experience abundant life. See what the Christian life is all about. Check it out. Experience the freedom that I have for you." Early Christians also had a little saying, and in Galatians 5, they say, "It is for freedom that Christ has set you free." And the good news of the Christian message is that you can live as a free person. The promised land is in our sights. We can build a new world for all in our church, in our community, and to the world. What we do here can echo throughout the world. But we have this tension to face inside of us. We have a tension between being free people, people who are alive, and being enslaved people, people who are dead. Being people who are present to others, or people who are distracted and distant. Being people who are open, or people who are closed. People who are forgiving, or people who are merciless. People who are peaceful, or people who are anxious. People who are compassionate, or people who are calloused. People who are generous with their time, their talents, and their treasures, or people who are stingy. We are people who have been invited to be free. Who the rabbi stands with his hand next to us and says, "Come and see. Come and experience for freedom, a free life." But sometimes we get caught in the traps of slavery. And that's why we are called to follow the teachings of Jesus. Because these teachings are practices of freedom. There are ways that we practice daily routine, week after week, day after day, month after month, and we become the transformed people that we want to be. Practices of freedom. Following Rabbi Jesus means a commitment to these practices. We don't just become the people we want to be by sleeping in every day or by not practicing. Just like the young girl will practice her piano over and over and over again until she becomes a master of it. Or the skillsman or the carpenter will practice their trade. Or the athlete will give everything they've got to become better at their trade. We have to grow into becoming like Christ. We have to grow to become free people. The three practices that the rabbi tells us are forgiveness, loving our enemies, and sacrificial service to each other. These are difficult things. But if we master these things following our rabbi, our world can be transformed. So the first, this week the first, next week love of enemies, and the following week sacrificial service. The first practice is forgiveness. And the Gospel of Matthew gives us three nice little episodes or nice stories that teach us forgiveness. First is a prayer. The Lord's Prayer. Many of us have said this prayer since we were little kids. But what's fascinating is the line in the prayer, "God, forgive us our debts or our trespasses or our sins as we have forgiven those who are indebted to us, who have trespassed against us, who have sinned." That one line stands at the center of the Lord's Prayer. And it's fascinating that the Lord's Prayer, besides praying, doesn't ask us to do anything else but to forgive. The prayer pictures a generous and gracious God who gifts us upon gift, who gives us a kingdom that's coming, who gives us his will that's being done, who gives us three square meals a day, who protects us from the evil one and keeps us away of the roads of temptation. But we're only asked to forgive. That's fantastic. In the Lord's Prayer, we forgive as God has forgiven us. So our movement of forgiveness happens because a God of love has forgiven us so greatly. So we forgive out of the abundance of our hearts. It's interesting to me, too, that it's a practice. The Lord's Prayer is something that most of us say every day. Maybe at night, maybe in the morning when we wake up, we've learned to pray this prayer. Jesus taught us to pray this prayer, to stitch into our very being this act of forgiveness for others. And then we have Peter's question. I love Peter. He's so honest sometimes, and he's so bold, and even though then he's making a fool of himself, he still remains a fool, which is awesome, because I relate to that, you know? So Peter goes to Jesus, and he says, how many times should I forgive my brother and sister when they sin against me? And he thinks he's being smart here, and he says, how about 7 times? Now, we all know that 7 times is the number of completion in the Bible. So Peter gives him a pretty slick religious answer. You know, I can draw a line at 7 times. Once you've offended me 7 times, it's done, right? Over. Well, Jesus does what Jesus always seems to do, throws us that curveball and teaches us to rethink of it in another way. And Jesus says, no, not 7 times, but 77 times. In some translations, it also is 70 times 7, which is 490. So Jesus doesn't rebuke him or correct him. He tells him a pronouncement of what heightens forgiveness. So it's not meant to be literal here. It's meant to say, you think 7 times? No. How about 490 times? It's meant to be funny and for us to open ourselves and say, oh man. Because I think what Peter was doing, what was natural, is to draw a line. He was saying, okay, you know, 7 sounds rational, reasonable. 7 times forgiveness, we got it. But when you set a line, Jesus is questioning, are you really forgiving someone? And maybe in that forgiveness, you have a different agenda if you're going to set a line. Where Jesus teaches us 490 times, 70 times 7, 77 times, Jesus tells us forgiveness from God always comes. It's like the Switchfoot song that says, maybe forgiveness is right where you fell. What if we serve a God where every time we stumble, God is right there forgiving us, picking us back up, helping us to become the people he called us to be 77 times. So the analogy is meant to be wide. 7 times? 77. It's meant to make us say, we are to forgive others over and over and over again. And in that way, we make a new world. My dad had a great idea one time. He decided that he would make us a little bit of a workout area. He got a little carried away, and he bought us a little punching bag, a little speed bag, and then he bought us a big punching bag, and then he bought us punching gloves. So as you can imagine, as boys, the age of 10 and 12, what we could do with those punching gloves with one another. We would have elaborate ultimate fighting boxing matches. We would make up names. We would make up scenarios, you know. We had a little boombox that we had the Rocky Balboa soundtrack in the background. It was fantastic. Until we got an uppercut that led to a bloody nose. Or until we put our gloves down and other brother just decided to give us a straight cheap shot. This happens with boys over and over again. And so we learned something, though, from this boxing, from our years in our make-believe ring. We learned that the only way to get the other person to stop boxing is to take off the gloves and to throw them down. That's like it is with forgiveness. Forgiveness is a commitment to put down the gloves. Now, when I would put down the gloves, my younger brother would chase me all over the place with his gloves on. He didn't get less angry, but he wouldn't punch me. I would just turn myself, and he'd run around and run around. Because once you've committed to stop the game of getting back at someone else, forgiveness can happen. When we follow the rabbi, we make a decision to take off the gloves, to stop the battle that's going on between us and that other person. And then lastly, Jesus tells us a parable. And Jesus often uses parables to surprise and to shock us, to get us to think about life in new ways. And he says, there was a great king, and the king decided to settle some accounts he had. And so he went to this man who owed him 10,000 talents. Now, what you have to know about this story is a talent equals 1 year's wage. This man owed multiple lifetime of wages. This man owed a huge fortune. And so the man comes in. He says, I want you to pay me back. The man says, I can't do it. So the king says, throw him into the prison. And the man says, please don't. I'll make an effort. Now, the king knew he could never repay that sum. Never. It was more than 10 lifetimes could repay that sum. But he said, go. Your debt is forgiven. It's clean. That didn't mean like we mean that, you know, okay, we'll tack on some more interest. It was a done. The debt is settled, ripped up. Student loans completely paid for. And then the man goes outside. And he is working for a man. He has employed a man that owes him, it's a 1,000 denarii. It's 100 denarii. 100 denarii. And he takes his neck and he says, pay me what you owe me. And the man says, I can't. So he throws him into prison, as the story goes. And then some people around the situation heard, and they went back to the king and said, look what he did. And mind you, 100 denarii, 1 denarii is worth 1 day's work. So this was only 100 days' work. So the comparison is multiple lifetimes, a huge fortune, to 100 days of working to pay off this debt. So this manager was forgiven this huge debt, and then he strangled a man for a little bitty debt. And then, of course, the king calls him back in and says, you wicked servant, how could you have been forgiven so great and not even forgiven your brother who had this small little debt? So the story does a couple things. First of all, the story is meant for us to say, our king, Jesus, the rabbi, is greater than that king. There's more grace and more forgiveness in God, in Jesus, than there is in any human king. But the second point of the story is, watch out. Because you have been forgiven. Watch the way you treat those around you. Forgive those around you for the ways they have hurt you. Incredible story. But all three stories, the prayer, Peter's question, and the parable, teach us of a loving God. A God who gives us forgiveness everywhere, all the time, to anyone, without exceptions. But what's fascinating, it doesn't leave us there. All three stories call us to give that type of love and forgiveness to others. That's significant. It challenges us to follow the rabbi. Now, when I think about how difficult this challenge is, it's not easy to forgive someone. Because the reality is we all live with bruises, we live with cuts, and we live with breaks. Bruises now, that's not so bad. Just the word you misinterpret from someone, the someone bumps into you, someone makes the gesture of international peace on the freeway, what we at RUMPC are fond of calling the highway salute, the bird, the New York hello, the double barrel salute, and the double deuce or dirty double. Laugh if you're with me. And then there's the reality of cuts. Now, cuts are more serious. Cuts are promises that are broken, friendships that are betrayed, those moments in life where we can actually say, ouch, that really hurt me that another person would do that to me. And the problem with cuts is they're not quite as serious as a break, but they can get infected. And when they get infected, that's when we have a serious problem, when we don't deal with these cuts that one another give to one another. And then lastly, there are these breaks. These are our most intimate of relationships. Our family, often, sadly, but others too, where serious boundaries are crossed, where love and guilt and manipulation has when love's been wrought awry and people have been manipulated, people have been hurt. These are the painful things, the broken bones that don't grow back in place, the ways that make us walk with a little bit of a misstep. Breaks are serious and painful. Breaks take a lifetime of healing and forgiveness. No matter what, whether you have a lot of bruises, cuts, and breaks. The reality of forgiveness, the reality of being hurt, is we've all been hurt. There's no easy, simple, simplistic way of healing. It's a lifetime direction. It's a practice of freedom. It's a choice to put down those boxing gloves and to say, I'm not going to live this in this battle anymore. And it often, if you're anything like me, every time I take the boxing gloves off, it seems like the next day something hits me and, man, I got those gloves back on again. And God calls us to, every time we notice we've put the gloves on, to take them off again, to live open and forgiven and loving to one another. I think that it's a lot like sowing wildflowers. As I told the kids in the kids' sermon today, that this is the image that I have right here for you. Right here for you. Okay. I asked Chris to do some drawings for me for our three sermons. And what I noticed along the mountains when I was camping this summer was the beautiful wildflowers. And I learned from Mary Hannah that different wildflowers come out in different seasons. And I think that forgiveness is like sowing seeds for a wildflower. Because you don't know when that wildflower is going to come out because you don't have the control. When people cut you, when people bruise you, when people break you, you can forgive them. They may not ever understand that they have done something wrong. You can ask for forgiveness from someone else, but they may not reciprocate it. But the rabbi calls us to forgiveness. The rabbi says the way of forgiveness is the way of freedom. So we're called to stand out and to sow wildflowers, not knowing whether the flower will bloom fully or whether it'll be dormant in that soil. People who follow the rabbi sow wildflowers courageously, without any cowardice inside of them, day by day, forgiving others for the wounds that they have caused them. And then as we conclude today, I was struck this week as I was thinking about forgiveness, and I was trying to reflect on how people had talked to me about forgiveness. And in our culture, it's interesting because a lot of us talk about not being able to forgive ourselves. And that's serious. The guilt and the pain over the years just sort of holds us captive. And I thought about this band that I know called Dispatch. And now this band has a song called The General. And they like to play it at the very end of their concert. So in 2011, they had a concert just this year at Red Rocks. And at the very end of the concert, they have this line, this chorus that says, "Go now, you are forgiven. Go now, you are forgiven. Go now, you are forgiven." The stories are powerful that Jesus teaches us, but over all of it is a "go now, you are forgiven." Forgiveness is right where you fell. Forgiveness is available for all of us. And as you go, as you feel the song in your heart and in your mind, you are able to forgive others. So we courageously take a step, following the rabbi, learning these practices of freedom, awaiting the adventure of discipleship. Who knows where we'll go as a community of faith and as people. Amen.